Hey, Damian Mason here with a question before we hop into this episode of The Business of Agriculture. If you farm for a living, you employ a lot of amazing technology, from your inputs that you put into the soil to the tractor that you sit in, your combine, and the amazing data that it harvests. But has your soil analytics kept up technologically with everything else in your farming operation? I would venture to say that no, it is not. Sure, you check for your nitrogen, your phosphorus, your potassium, your micronutrients as well. But what about disease pressure? Do you know what diseases and what pests you're going to face next year? No, you don't. But you can now figure that out with Pattern Ag's predictive analytics. Think about it. They can tell you now with testing what the likelihood of facing nasty diseases, things like cyst nematode or sudden death syndrome, what the likelihood of you having this in your field. Then you know how to prepare, how to treat, and where to invest your money. It's using technology to make you bigger yields and therefore make you bigger money. Go to www.pattern.ag to learn more. They are pioneering the way in predictive agronomy. Well, greetings and welcome to another fantastic episode of The Business of Agriculture. We are talking today about the future of aerial agriculture. I was in a meeting in February. I put something on social media about a BASF meeting it was, and they were talking all about using drone technology to monitor what's happening in fields and the trials that they're doing because it's not quite there. And I put that on social media, and my old buddy Andrew Moore, who's the executive director for the National Agricultural Aviation Association, had some comments about it. They were a client of mine several years ago. I spoke at their conference, and I said, you know what, let's just do a podcast about this. That's what we're bringing together right here. And I want to say, by the way, the National Agricultural Aviation Association, one of my favorite groups I've ever been in front of. Two of the dudes wore my old Agriculture Because Starvation Sucks t-shirts to the meeting. Also, that meeting was in December of 2020. Nobody had meetings. When I got to the hotel in Savannah, I flushed the toilet in my hotel room. Rust came out because the hotel room had not had anybody in it for like 8 months. And I'm like, this is cool. Everybody's like afraid to have meetings, but not the crop dusters. You went downstairs, they're throwing bean bags, they're shaking hands, hugging each other, drinking beer. And my wife said, that's really neat. It's like the old days. I said, honey, these guys fly little Volkswagen sized airplanes laden with gallons of poison and Dodge power lines. They're not afraid of a virus. Okay. These are some pretty hardy dudes. Anyway, Andrew Moore is, if you're listening to this, he's like grabbing his head right now saying, oh my goodness. But anyway, I love their group. I love that meeting. And also I got really more dialed in on aerial application because of speaking at that group and meeting some of those folks. So the future will probably be unmanned, but there's going to be a lot of stuff above these fields that is unmanned. So to talk about that, I've got Mike DePaula. He is with Taranis, and he's going to tell us what Taranis is. And I've also got Bill Reynolds. Bill Reynolds is with Leading Edge Aerial Technology. And then, of course, Andrew Moore, Executive Director for NAAA. Did I get the right number of A's? Okay. First off, what's Taranis, Mike? I met you. You had me on your own Acre Forward podcast recording as a guest. What is Taranis for those that are listening right now?
Yeah. So simply put, we do crop intelligence using high-resolution aerial reconnaissance would be a way to think about it. And we're scalable across millions of acres of open row cropland. So basically, we're taking lots of pictures of the crops, and we're letting artificial intelligence analyze and tell us what's in there so we can get more opportunity out of the acre. We understand what's happening. It's game tape for the acre, right? There's not a farmer, there's not an advisor good enough that wouldn't benefit from understanding how he or she is managing that crop in the face of different hybrids, different weather, different things. And we've got the kind of capability that can count the spots on a ladybug, which means we see defoliated leaves, we see disease, we understand it.
Is your technology the actual flying device or the cameras and the AI within it?
That's a great question. So we started out, 3 years ago, we were building everything, the optics, the drones. Now we're using all the drones and optics that are off the shelf. It's changed to that point. Our technology, our proprietary difference is the fact that we have the artificial intelligence across hundreds of millions of images to be able to detect and understand what's in there at scale. And then we have the operational capability to dispatch the human capital to these acres. So we do a really good job logistically of sending the people out to be there at the right time.
So the original query was, do you make the drones? You don't make the drones.
We do not make the drone. We've done it in the past. It's no longer necessary.
My point was, are drones getting to the point where they're like buying a Ford Taurus? You can just, or a BMW or whatever. Bill Reynolds, leading edge aerial technology. What is leading edge aerial technology?
Well, we're a U.S.-based company in Daytona Beach, Florida, and we design, manufacture U.S.-based unmanned aircraft, and we sell them all over the world, as well as we have a Part 137 certificate where we provide contract services using our unmanned aircraft. So we own all the software, write all the code, and manufacture the systems.
Got it. Andrew Moore, National Ag Aviation Association. Your logo is on my new website, by the way. My new and improved website, which just launched last week, my new and improved DamianMace.com. And we had to put up there some clients that Damian has worked with, and your logo is up there. You might even be a testimonial from you on there. What's in AAA?
It's the National Agricultural Aviation Association, and we represent 1,560 aerial application operations throughout the country, which includes unmanned applications. Bill Reynolds, our colleague on the call with us right now, of course, is an NAAA member. Our industry in the United States alone treats 127 million acres of cropland, and that doesn't account for 5.1 million acres of forestry, 7.9 million acres of pasture land. We're also doing cover crop work, seeding, firefighting work as well, and also public health spraying for disease carrying mosquitoes and other health threatening insects.
The massive amount of acres that they get over. And here's the thing that I am fascinated by. So there's roughly 360 million cropland acres in the United States, 350, 380, depending on how many acres are cropped in a given year, but call it 360. I think it's a good number we can all agree on. Your guys cover more than one third of those acres. And I'm going to tell you that some of those acres get covered more than once by your guys. I mean, there's crops that need to get hit 2-3 times a year, right?
Oh, even more so. I mean, if you're in an area of high humidity, you're growing tubers, potatoes, what have you, multiple applications.
Right.
Rice is seeded in some areas by air, fertilized, herbicides, fertilized, and insecticides. And then there's also defoliants.
We see them in my part of the world. My farm is in Indiana, and so we see crop dusters, and that's cool. One day, my wife and one of her friends were laying out on a deck, and the field across the road was getting, and I think they went over that field 9 times. I mean, they were right there, just kind of just really checking. Anyway, but I was in Arkansas. One of my extreme ag guys that I work with, Matt Miles, and I mean, like all day, like it was like the Battle of Midway. I mean, there was just planes flying every which way. So those acres get covered a lot. So anyway, what's interesting to me is how many acres get covered, and the average person wouldn't think about that. So more than one third of the cropland acres get covered, and those crops sometimes 3, 4, 5 times a year, 8 million acres of pasture, 5 million acres of forestry, roughly is what I wrote down right there. They treat gypsy moss with aerial application in my part of the world. There was a time, and I thought that was pretty cool that they're out spraying for gypsy moss over my hardwood forest. And I didn't have to pay for it. So that's a lot of acres. And I don't think that there's a threat, because one of the things when we first started this in our little dialogue online, Andrew, was, does the person that flies a airplane as a crop duster afraid that he's going to get replaced with a drone? And it's not there yet, and it maybe never will be. So I guess let's go around the horn. Let's start with you, since you're the guy that I asked first, Andrew. Is that a threat, or is that something that you think they all end up working together?
Well, I don't think it's a threat. I think that there's it's complementary, and I think that, you know, Bill's the best person to ask about this. Because he's doing areas that you wouldn't get a 800 gallon hopper, air tractor, 802 into, or even a helicopter that are more maneuverable. You're going to be in areas, whether it's vineyards in California, they're using them. Bill can go into greater detail on doing aquatic work and so forth, where you're just not going to be able to reach with a manned aircraft.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at covering a lot of acres quickly to address that pest infestation, and you're going to go to with probably a manned aircraft, because especially if it's a field that might have rolling hills or might be a late developed crop where you don't want to affect the yields or damage the plant by getting in a terrestrial vehicle. Mm-hmm. But you also want to eradicate that disease or that insect right away. You're going to go with aerial application or manned aerial application.
And so that's the idea, you know, a drone is, you know, can be the size of my staple gun that I'm holding in my hand. You're not going to go and treat, you know, a 160 acre field with something that's that size. So Bill, where's this go?
Yeah, just those specialty locations where I'd like to think we've saved some lives already in some of the areas that are using unmanned aircraft. I mean, it's, you know, the rates per acre is really the key to this. A lot of the rates in California are 15 gallons per acre, and a drone's only carrying 5 gallons or 10 gallons at the most. So you're just never going to get the job done. So there's no question the manned aircraft must stay. They will probably be here for my lifetime and maybe my kids' lifetimes. But those especially areas that are dangerous or very difficult to get to, absolutely the perfect solution. You know, trimming up edges of fields, near power lines, just eliminate that from the manned task and make everything safer. It's just a terrific tool.
All right, Mike, you're sitting here chomping the bit because I've asked him about these questions. And again, you're on the leading edge of the technology. I think it's one of those where, you know, the computer didn't replace, you know, we all are not unemployed now because of a computer. So it's kind of the same thing. I'm kind of thinking that what it ends up doing is it complements, as Andrew's point, but also maybe it makes us better. Like the stuff you're doing, Bill mentioned corners, edges. There's stuff that gets missed, you know, and maybe this whole the thing isn't about replacing labor necessarily. It's about getting better at what we're doing.
Yeah, I think it's creating better jobs. So if you have more unmanned for reconnaissance, you can be smarter with your manned aircraft and what you need to do with application. So I think it's changing the kinds of jobs. And also, it's really expensive sometimes to put people in the air and to put chemistry in the air and work through that. So knowing before you go, we have capabilities to do that. We understand what's there and we can target aspects of the field differently, but you have to understand what's there before you get up. I mean, we've done fixed wing and we've done rotary, and where we've seen, you know, high volume aerial reconnaissance, those companies go out of business because it takes a lot to get over a lot of ground and get the quality right. We put a lot of work into understanding that. We know what it takes to do that. So I just think we're in a different world now where we can do high resolution. We know what's in the crop. We understand where the issues are. And it gives people the opportunity to then take the equipment out and do the things they need to do in a different way. Because you still have to get material out there. You still have to know what's going on. That's not going away.
So the change, and we talked about before we hit record, the pace of change. Let's go back to Andrew Moore. You've been with NAA for how long?
26 years.
All right. So this wasn't even a thing 26 years ago. I mean,
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
I mean, hell, it wasn't a thing 6 years ago, right?
Well, 2013 there was a title in the FAA reauthorization bill that started to work towards facilitating more unmanned aircraft into the airspace.
Got it. Yeah. And I want to get to the regulatory stuff a little bit. Bill Reynolds, I got a question for you. You said, you know, there's a place for the unmanned stuff, edges, near power, high risk places. But what's the capacity? You spoke about there's some acres in California need 15 gallons of stuff per acre, let's say. And right. What's the biggest unmanned aircraft right now that could actually go out and spray?
I believe it's the Pelican, which is a fixed wing aircraft that carries, and I think it's STC now by the FAA.
Hey, wait. Hey, you're speaking your vernacular, not the listener's vernacular. What's SDC or STC?
STC, well, and it's a certified aircraft by the Federal Aviation Administration. Uh-huh. And I believe the Pelican is somewhere between 400 pounds of a payload.
Does that sound right to you, Andrew?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know it was STC approved, certified, but yeah, they're starting to get larger. So what's 8 gallons goes into 400. How many tires? Eight pounds.
400. Maybe about 50 gallons.
That's how many gallons it would be.
Yeah. So 50 gallons on something that needs only 5 gallons an acre. That means it can go out, you know, it can cover 10 acres, which doesn't seem like a lot. But is it to the point where it could do it without having to have someone guide it? I mean, that's the big question, right?
Oh, that is the big question.
Yeah, I mean, if you could just type into the thing the coordinates of this field, and it somehow was smart enough, and that's where I want to get to Mr. DiPaolo down here, that thing was smart enough that it just kept going over to the nurse tank and sucking out its 50 gallons, right, and then going out and flying and hitting another 10 acres and then coming back. Is that too Flash Gordon-ish? By the way, kind of a reference to the old days, Bill. I knew that you would get the Flash Gordon thing. Mike over here, he's kind of a millennial. He's probably saying, I've got to Google Flash Gordon.
Do you know Flash Gordon? I'll take the millennial for now.
right. Okay. Is that too Flash Gordon-ish? Is this coming? Is this where we're going to be, do you think?
It's where we are.
The smart machine can go and fill itself up out of a nurse tank and go over and hit the acres and then go back and fill itself up and then hit the next, keep going down the field? The listener can't see you nodding your head, even though I can. Well,
yeah, I don't think we're far off from that, because from a reconnaissance standpoint, we have machines that can go nest to nest and recharge itself for different applications, just from an energy standpoint. Now, I think there's some mechanical hurdles to that. There's safety and regulatory, but it's not. Look, 3 years from now, this will already be done.
Okay, so what you're saying right now is the technology to have a machine fly out, spray off its payload, go back to a nurse tank, go over and go and spray its payload off again on the right number of acres and keep moving down the field or across the field. You say the technology is there already.
I'd say that the technical capabilities are there. Whether it's commercially or regulatory feasible is a different question, but the capabilities are there. In terms of identifying so you can do that, that capability is already commercialized. So the reconnaissance to actually do that and know where to spray and how much, those files are already being generated. They're already being mapped. They're already created and able for commercial use. Right now, everything you just said is being manually done. Yeah. And I think my opinion, for what it's worth, is the main barriers are going to be regulatory and commercial feasibility, not anything technological.
Well, let's take on the regulatory. Then, Andrew, that's obviously your wheelhouse. You're in Washington, D.C. Your job is to go and deal with regulation and, I assume, buy hookers for senators and various other things like that sometimes too. We don't need to get into that. I mean, unless you want to, but
I think I have to play defense now on the reputation of the industry and my own reputation. But no, what's happening this year, just as you have a farm bill every 5 years, you have an FAA reauthorization every 5 years, and it just so happens that they both have to be reauthorized this year. And that is one of the areas that the respective transportation committees on the House and Senate are looking at. They're looking at what's called BVLOS, and that is operating beyond visual line of sight. You know, putting together some sort of structure now that allows for an unmanned vehicle to drone, to fly without having someone actually seeing it. It can go beyond your line of sight.
So if I want to use drone technology in a field, I can legally, the regulation is there, but I've got to be there on some sort of a device operating it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. There are certain exemptions that the FAA can offer to allow you to work BVLOS. But I think the UAV drone community would say they're cumbersome. They'd like to have a little bit more of a less cumbersome process. That's what they're looking at with this current FAA reauthorization. From our standpoint, and I think that Bill and I, we share this, is, you know, bear in mind, there's, I don't know, but Bill can address this or Mike, you probably have 1.5 million registered drones out there, 1 to 1.5 million registered drones with the FAA. And you had another 600,000 manned aircraft. You have to have a safe airspace in which to operate. And one of the things that we've been pushing is to ensure always that a unmanned aircraft must give right of way to a manned aircraft. So, whether that's technology having some sort of sense and avoid technology that requires that, that's fine. I mean, we don't need someone to actually visually observe as long as it's a certified equipment by the FAA that shows that that equipment, that sense and avoid equipment can actually sense and avoid a manned aircraft. So that's something we're pushing along with our other colleagues in the general aviation, well, the manned aviation space.
I want to hear a little bit more about the other regulatory stuff. And I got a bunch of questions when we get to the economics and then a few of the other things I want to do. But before I do that, if you are a farmer and you are technologically oriented, I think it's important. We're talking about technology right now in this episode, but let's talk about your smartphone. You use it for just about everything, right? You've got your calculator on there, you're texting your friends, you're calling your wife, whatever the thing is, your email, all of your stuff. You've got a bunch of apps on there, but do you have the app AgVisor Pro? AgVisor Pro. It's an app. It's easy. Go to your app store, put it on your phone. Why do you want to do that? I'll tell you why. Because my buddy Rob Syke is an entrepreneur in agriculture, and he looked around a long time ago and said, you know what? Farmers spend too much time seeking information, questions to answers, answers to questions. You know what you can do? Go on and find the experts. That's what AgVisor Pro. It's a network for professionals in agriculture who know stuff. Maybe you are struggling with something like drone technology and how to use it for more efficiency and gain on your farm. You know what? Somebody on AgVisor Pro has done this and can help you. AgVisor Pro is an app put on your phone. If you don't want to take my word for it, take McKinsey Fingerhut. That's a farmer in the Prairie Province of Canada who's a big believer in AgVisor Pro. Here's what he has to say.
We were sitting on the fence about booking the rest of our fertilizer, but after one quick session with Mo Agostino, that really just kind of gave us the kick that we needed and to finalize the rest of our booking. In a week or so, the price rallied $100-$200 a ton and subsequently saved us over $70,000.
All right. Thanks to AgVisor Pro. Okay, guys, let's talk about
I put in a plug real quick. I'm sorry to interrupt. I mean, it seems like it's plug time. This is a great book. I don't know if anyone's ever read this, but my goodness, I mean, my life would be different had I not read it.
By the way, if you're listening and you're not watching the video, Andrew Moore just held up a copy of Do Business Better, the book that released in April of 2019, geared to entrepreneurs, small business people, aspiring business people, or anybody that has a brain and wants to be better at business. So I appreciate him plugging that for me. while we're on this thing about, okay, the regulation is a big part of
disappointed
it.
Disappointed that I'm not on screen, but anyhow, go ahead.
You are on screen. Okay, here's my question. Right. Is there any reason, I mean, Washington, D.C. doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense about a lot of the things that are done there. Is there any, other than safety for, like you said, you want to defer to a manned aircraft to make sure that somehow a guy that is out there treating a field doesn't get whacked by a drone and it kills him, right? Is there any resistance or any regulatory burden other than that, that any there's any concern for? Yeah, Mike's nodding his head. Mike, what do you see it from a different side than the guy that's in D.C. perhaps, because you're not in the business of, interpreting the regulations. What do you see?
I'd say these guys are probably, they're the experts in the regulatory, but from a practical matter, you think about the liability when you're in business of more equipment you have out there. If it conflicts with, say, aerial application, the timing of that, and you're doing recon, these vehicles, you got to avoid collision. You do have a lot of equipment and people that can be out on the acre if things start to happen and you don't have somebody paying attention or available to that vehicle today. I think there's a lot of liability questions and concerns that we haven't fully resolved. The good news is in most of ag, it's wide open spaces. And so the risks, can be managed, and I think it's manageable. But I think for me, visual line of sight, I agree. That's one that we need to talk through and reduce some of the barriers for. But the other is operating more than one at once. So even when you have visual line of sight, we're only allowed to operate, to my knowledge, one drone at a time. And I think the world's going to change. These things talk to each other. You're going to have a need to have more than one out there to be efficient and to get the recon and the application where you want it. So I don't know why or where those barriers are on the swarm technology, but that's something I expect to change in the near future.
Are we going to see swarms of these things? Is that what I'm hearing? And or is there a regulatory concern about that?
Well, there's actually swarms now. I mean, if you go to Dodger Stadium on Friday nights, I think they have a drone light show. So they're actually pretty cool watching some of these drone light shows. But
would you say the drone light show is better than the actual baseball at a Dodgers game?
No, Dodger baseball is number one. There's no question about it. But look, if the technology is there to sense and avoid, that's really our biggest concern. And you mentioned that, that seems like a slam dunk. Why would there be a problem with a drone giving a right of way or avoiding a manned aircraft? Well, there have been what are known as aviation rulemaking committees under the FAA, where the stakeholders in a space, in the aviation space, will propose regulations to the FAA. And the FAA is looking at this issue right now beyond visual line of sight. There was a aviation rulemaking committee on beyond visual line of sight that was mostly focused on having drone interests and not a lot of manned aviation interests. And they did not include having to give the right of way in certain circumstances in which aerial applications are made, specifically within 100 feet of, say, trees and power lines and farmsteads and silos. Well, that's where, manned aerial applicators are operating. So we want to make sure that, we don't get these, these Goliaths in the tech industry, because this ARC, this rulemaking committee, consisted of Wing, which is a subsidiary of Alphabet Group, parent company of Google, Amazon, and didn't take into account really a lot of general aviation interests, which is not just us, but law enforcement and EMS. And again, Bill, I think, agrees with me, and I'm sure Mike does too, because we do have a lot of our manned or unmanned applicators that agree with this, having to give the right of way. It's not as slammed out as you would think.
Okay. Bill Reynolds, on this whole front, I don't get down this whole thing about, Senate Bill number 353, whatever, but what's the reality of this? Is it going to get worked out and are we going to be fine? We're going to end up having, is there going to be vested interests that get something done that regulatory wise that shouldn't be, where it bans it or it makes it unsafe because Amazon wants more drones? Where does that go?
Yeah, I can only speak to the agricultural side of this and the applications. And integrating these aircraft or these unmanned aircraft into national airspace is a very high priority and is the primary focus on every COA that's submitted to the FAA. We are operating down below 80 feet, no matter what we do. And so we are mixed up with air tractors and thrushes and helicopters. And we absolutely agree with giving way to the manned aircraft. And we have landed numerous times, and we communicate with aerial applicators that we're going to be out in certain areas, and we file NOTAMs. So we cover the rules, and we back check ourselves, and it has worked out well. We've never had any close incursion of any kind because of that.
Mike, I want to talk about the technology again. The technology that you're talking about, where you now so much better. It was what? Whenever drones first became a thing, I get emails about land auctions, for instance. And you can click on a video, and the video is of the farm. Say, I want to potentially buy an 80-acre tract of land, and they fly around it so I can get an eagle eye, bird's eye view of that land. That became a thing. So that's essentially a video camera. So that was one iteration. And then it became, now what you're telling me is you're out there flying around, and it's not just to show me what the field looks like. It's actually scouting. Is that what we are? Like, I can say, okay, over in this corner, there's 3 acres here that's got this infestation of a chemical resistant weed or something like that, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've got the ability not only to capture at high resolution and transmit that information quickly to the device of your choice, but we use artificial intelligence to actually document what's in there. Because we could take millions and millions of acres and take the pictures, but it's not worth anything unless you can analyze it economically and quickly and tell you what's in there. And so that's what's really changed, right? Is not only have the drones changed, the platforms and the ability to take the imagery, but it's really understanding what's in it. So yeah, we go down to a species level. We count all the holes in a defoliated soybean leaf in a field. And we could tell you your economic injury threshold in a way that no one's seen. We're giving stand counts. I mean, just think about this, counting plants, the way it's done today, it's an estimate from different areas.
Yeah. So I know my seeding population, my extreme ag guys talk about this all the time. You know, they put in what 30,000, to the acre on corn. And then they say, we got a 93% emergence rate, you know?
Yep.
So, but I'm like, you didn't go and square off an acre. You didn't go out there and square 43,000 square feet and then go out and count every plant. They just went out and counted a row for a certain amount of distance and then did a mathematical calculation to see what it is. You're saying that that's pretty unscientific. I mean, it's as close as we can get.
I think everything gets better all the time, right? So you're not going to see every inch of a field and record that because there's data limitations and economic limitations. But when you can sample thousands of plants and then interpolate that data and understand what's there, whether it's weeds or stand count, you're infinitely better off than where you were without that. And you can understand how it's happening on the acre opposite the soil types, opposite the treatments you use. So it really is game tape. It's performance. It's how you're interacting with the environment, with the weather, with your hybrids, with your inputs. Now you can record that and understand that spatially. That's what's new.
Yeah. I want to get to another technology question probably for Bill, but I want to go to Andrew real quickly. For a guy that lives in DC, but flies to LA to go and watch Dodgers games, Mike just said, everything gets better all the time. I was going to say, except air travel. Air travel sucks. It always has. It's worse today than it was when I started becoming a frequent flyer 30 years ago. I was just going to throw that out there.
Well, I know I get better. I get better all the time.
Well, yeah, you do. And better and more attractive. Okay. Real quickly then. Probably for Bill on this. So we talk about this technology. What about since we have for the spraying actually, and what if can the recon also then have the chemical on board? And when it sees that there's three and I don't need much, maybe I got an 80-acre field. There's only a problem, a real bad problem on about 3 or 4 acres in this one part of it, of this field. Now I don't need to haul 15 gallons the acre. I only need to call enough for 3 acres. Is the machine going to be, it's smart enough that it goes out, it sees a problem and, you know, because John Deere's unveiled their See and Spray technology on a ground rig sprayer, meaning one that you go out and drive around. Is that coming? Is it there?
That is definitely coming. Yeah. Weed recognition, auto spraying. I mean, Mike can hand us a file directly to our ground control station and the aircraft will create the flight plan automatically. So there's a really nice bridge for what they're doing and what we're doing. But yes, the AI for weed recognition, as an example, is very close and getting integrated, I would say, within the next 12 to 18 months for us. I don't know about anybody else. But yeah, it could certainly recognize those types of crop weaknesses with the right AI.
So I'm thinking like fungicide, you almost usually are treating that before you even know that you have a bad problem. Otherwise, if it's evident to your eye, you've already lost yield. So you're going to probably hit every acre with a fungicide. Herbicide, on the other hand, you're going to hit where there's weed pressure. So that would be a place. I'm thinking insecticide, probably the same thing. As Mike said, he can see an area in a soybean field that's got a real intensity of something that's defoliating it, whatever, you know, petite leafhopper, whatever the thing should be. It's causing you a problem. So I'm thinking insecticide and herbicide are where we can do more of a drone see and spray, but there's other stuff you're going to put it on for fertility, et cetera. Yes, Andrew.
Well, I was going to say that in our statistics, we're showing that I think you nailed it. One of the areas where it's very expensive is, of course, fertilizer applications. So you're seeing a lot more precision application fertilizer applications or variable rate fertilizer applications. Just to be a little more progressive than you, Damien, you know, I'm going to go Star Wars here and not Buck Rogers, but I, you know, agree with Mike. I mean, we had Ofer Flor and Ofer Schlamm, the COO and CEO at our NAAA conventions in the past too. And they were there for the 100th anniversary in 2021. And by the way, how could an industry stay alive for 100 years if they didn't constantly evolve like our nation's aerial applicators?
Yeah.
That's why we're talking about this technology now. But I foresee just like you mentioned, the see and spray from deer, that you'll have Mike's technology going out doing the initial reconnaissance, and shortly thereafter, all that data is being fed to the broader fields, to our manned aerial applicators, into those tight areas, to builds, drones, to make those applications. You know, that's where I see, definitely before we celebrate the bicentennial of aerial application, that's going to be happening. So
I think we get caught up, like, so see and spray, good technology. If you have equipment, and that's something you're going to lean into because I can use less, I can target, understand it. But you have to step back from the technology and say, what makes the most sense? We can do aerial reconnaissance now in a systematic way. This feeds models. It feeds other things. It means we're on that acre through different times, before and after different applications, different weather events. You're going to need to do that anyway. So if you're doing that, it's less about see and spray just in the moment. It's more about understanding what's there. So then you can go load out your tanks and make the application. Because one of the biggest problems that I think you see, whether it's see and spray on the ground or aerial, what are you putting in the tank? What kind of weeds do you have? By the way, I would challenge even the use of fungicides in this commentary, because right now we say prophylactic use. Absolutely. But if you start seeing frog eye in soybeans and it's only a little bit in your field, you're going to come out there and you're going to treat it with a fungicide to knock it back, get what curative you can, but at least stop it from penetrating the rest of the field, the rest of the crop. So this changes, Damien, how we're managing and how we're understanding crops and injury thresholds and sites and modes of action. This data is changing, not just within the field, but we don't even know how to prioritize field to field, Damien. And so sometimes we lose the forest for the trees, or we lose the farm for the fields, because we're in the field trying to vary. We're not even doing a good enough job varying field to field. Yeah. Do I know what start I got? Does that change what I do later? If I've got 20 fields, yes, it's going to. So I think we've just got to crawl, walk and run through this before we're talking about turning on and off nozzles. Let's just decide what we're taking to the field and what we're going to do. And maybe I'm going to dial it up and dial it back based on the start I got and whether I'm controlling my weeds properly or not.
To the point there about variable rate, Mike's point is you're saying there's a whole bunch of stuff, like basically low hanging fruit. Now we've got the technology, you're saying, hell, we're talking about spraying just this little corner or just this 2 acres in the middle of the field. We're not even we've got easier stuff to cross off the list. Yes. I think that's what I'm hearing here.
Yeah, absolutely. Because right now, if we work with a farmer, our retailers work with farmers. If they've got 20 fields and he knows he's got a good start on 10, the rest have kind of a challenge and the weeds are not managed well on 2 of the 10 that have a challenge. Are you going to go and side dress the same way, field to field? Are you going to go with the same concern? Maybe you don't have a fungicide budget for all 20, but the 10 that have a good start where you control the weeds, you're probably darn sure going to make sure you've covered it and protected those. So I just think the way we think about optimizing our inputs and our decisions before we even take all that steel and paint out on the acre is changing already. We're already seeing it in our business. And it doesn't mean we won't do the see and spray things. Mm. I just think, Damien, we've got to be smarter about what we can do with the technology and where it is today. And then we need to think about, while the tech is really cool, there's still humans, there's still chemistry. Yeah. There's still a lot of pounds you got to take out to an acre. There are logistics issues that need to be solved before the equipment even shows up.
Of course, with the right technology, we're going to be using less. I mean, that's an environmental story that the entire industry, and this is, and certainly no knock on my buddies, the crop dusters that I, you know, spoke to a few years ago and drank beers with afterwards. They can't target the way this technology can target, right, Andrew? I mean, that's going to be the environmental story that the drone technology can tell is a better one than the aerial applicator traditionally can tell.
Well, first of all, targeting only gets better and better. So we're doing stuff now with truncating the booms in terms of the in the proportion to the wingspan, where we're seeing larger droplets that were ever used before. You're seeing a lot of new technologies and boom systems, the capstan boom system, electrostatic boom systems that are markedly mitigating drift. And that's one thing that's being worked on right now is you know, there's been existing model atmospheric models for manned aircraft on how efficacious or how much material moves off target. That information, because it's a new industry, is not as robust for UAVs. So they're still trying to figure out, and there's so many different models too. They're trying to figure out their boom length in proportion to their rotors and multi-rotors and how that affects the application. But because they're putting out less material, and you know, that clearly is going to result in likely less off-target drift. But that technology is only getting better.
Yeah, everything. You're getting better. Mike says everything's getting better.
There's no question.
Everything's getting better all the time. And I said, except air travel. Money. This is called the Business of Agriculture podcast because I talk about this as a business. It's neat to get excited about the technology. I'm all on board. I think this is great. Pace of change, Mike referenced before we hit the record button. I tell my audiences, Mike, in 10,000 years of humans endeavoring in agriculture, we didn't do a whole hell of a lot of forward progress for 9,900 of those 10,000 years. We got to where we had a horse or a mule or an oxen, and that was it. It was muscle. And then starting about 1930s, we hybridized corn and we mechanized. Hybridization, mechanization. And my God, we've been off to the races ever since. In the last 100 years, we made more forward progress than they did in the first 9,900 years. Well, you know what? I've been telling my audiences, in the next 10 years, it's going to be as great of change as what we saw in the last 100. I don't think we're going to 6.5 times our yields again. You know, we went from 35 bushels an acre of corn to 175 bushels, roughly. We're not going to do that kind of thing. But I think the natural resource allocation is the biggie. And that's where I'm excited about some of this technology. We're putting less stuff out there, good for the environment, good for the dollars, et cetera. So let's talk about how it makes sense money-wise. Who wants to take that one on? Bill, you're nodding your head.
Well, I mean, this goes back to 18 years ago. I invented a GPS system that took in meteorology and offset aircraft and accounted for drift. I mean, that has advanced so far. If I'm going to spend money to get more yield, how much do I have to spend and what yield will I lose or gain? I guess that's always the balance, right, in agriculture. So, the investment into unmanned aircraft to get operational is not that tremendous. Typically contractors or people that are using unmanned aircraft are getting a revenue offset back within the first, 12 months. So it's not an enormous investment.
What about then to do what Mike is doing, meaning Taranis is doing, the company?
Yeah.
Am I going to own your machine or are you going to charge me a subscription? Like, in other words, my farm guys, extreme ag guys, they're big farmers. They have 2 sprayers per farm and maybe more. And they own them. But a lot of things are moving to a subscription model. Maybe you don't, there's like even cars I've been reading about, like you can just pay a subscription to Porsche, depending on how you say the word, and you can get a different car every 30 days, whatever. Are we going to own this thing, or is a farmer going to own it, or is the co-op going to own it, or the Nutrians and the Helenas and the Wilbur Ellises of the world? Who's going to own this thing, Mike?
I don't think we know. I think there's a value chain transformation happening that's deeper in terms of understanding where consolidation takes place and where the benefits are. So today, a lot of the applications done by a cooperative and a retailer, depending on the part of the country and the crop. Some of this, how you even buy inputs, depending on the vertical, is different, 3 versus 2-step options. So I think what we're going to change is we need to stop and say, okay, how are we making these decisions? Who's involved in the decision? So today you have a different decision and vertical on equipment. How'd my planner do? I know what the machine said.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that we all know what happened. Then when you have an input, you've got input providers with chemistry working through retail to understand where this is going, how it can be used better. You have fertilizer. I think all these players are going to come together around the grower to understand what's there and how those decisions get made will be different. Everybody's going to share in understanding what's happening in the acre, which is going to change how we buy and use inputs. So we talked about outcome-based, Damien. The reason you can't have it today is we don't know what's really happening. Mm-hmm. As that gets better, as you really get to understanding risk and outcome-based because you know what's there, the monetization that happens for all of these services is going to change, and that's going to change where the assets live. So I don't know that I have the answer. I gave you a long-winded thing to say. Yeah. This thing is changing quick, but not in the way value chains have changed in the past. This is no longer about physical consolidation, although that always has to be considered. This is about virtual integration and where the decisions get made and how they get made. That's what's changing. In the past, to do that, you had to have all the machines, you had to consolidate, you had to have all the people. Now that's changing. I think we have something maybe that's similar to this open source concept in IT, where a lot of people can share and benefit from the data, and it'll change where equipment lives and who owns it and how it works.
Then let's talk about the money. So here's my point. I was at the I worked for John Deere. Was at their trainings facility demo day in Florida in November, and they revealed the See and Spray, and it was awesome. And I learned a lot about it.
That's awesome.
They also said this might be a $1 million machine. And so, is the case could be made for aerial? What if we get to where we can do? What if we could we get to where we eliminate the need for that $1 million machine? Can aerial get there? Probably not. There's just too many gallons need to go on and whatnot. Am I right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know how much, for example, build the Pelican. What's that? What is that selling for? And if that's 50 gallons, you know, I know Air Tractor is working now on getting a 1,000 gallon hopper certified through the FAA. So when you start,
dear listener, Air Tractor is a major manufacturer of those yellow planes that you see flying around. They're the John Deere of aerial applicators, I guess you can say, right?
Well said. So, yeah. So when you start adding up all these different, you know, you're going to have what, 50 go, you know, what's that? 20 of those to like 20 Pelicans. How much
to equal one sprayer ground rig that has a 1,000 gallon tank, which would probably not even, I mean, they're somewhere larger than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the money? You're saying the money, it's still probably cheaper to have a piece of machinery in the field.
Yeah. And here's the other thing. The larger the aircraft, right now you're seeing mostly unmanned aircraft, and Bill can of course should comment on this as well. But, you know, right now, most UAVs are smaller. You know, right now, the Part 107, under the Federal Aviation Regulations, you have to, that only regulates drones 55 pounds or less. Once you get above that weight, you have to apply for a certain exemption. But right now, drones are not certificated. They don't have as rigorous of certification standards or maintenance standards. But the larger you get in terms of capacity, I think the more costs, the more likely you're going to have to abide by those maintenance and certification standards, where, again, the price is going to go up. Because that's a whole other area of rulemaking at the FAA.
Yeah. So even the,
well,
even
I think Bill should comment on that.
So I guess what your point is, you know, we all know technology. I still am old fashioned. I have a calculator on my desk. It's a solar calculator, but also we got it at Staples and I think I paid $3.99 for it. You know, I'm old enough to remember when my siblings went off to college and they had, honestly, it was like a $170 calculator, and that was in the 1970s. So we know the technology price is going to come down on all of this drone technology, but then there's the compliance part that's going to be not insignificant, is what Andrew says. Bill, Andrew said three times that you need to comment on something. So
I'm just thinking about the business model and how Yamaha approached it when they first came into the U.S. They would not sell the systems. They would lease them because they wanted to protect their intellectual property or IP. I thought that's what Pelican was going to do, and that still might be it. They won't sell them. We have a little bit of different philosophy. We will sell them as long as they have their certifications and they get their waivers and they're operating in national airspace safely. So I don't see that model working very well at all, just based on historical performance.
You're talking about the leasing, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. And there's another, then you get into regulations, which we haven't, you know, talked a little bit about it, but under the aviation rules, federal aviation rules, right, to make an aerial application, you have to have what's called a Part 137 certificate. And there's a lot of requirements under that that require an expert in that field from a number of standpoints, whether it's the piloting or just making the application of economic poisons, and people have to directly be under and oversee those applications. So if you start leasing it, you're kind of, you could make an argument that that could be a violation of a Part 137 operation. So either the regs would have to change, but I don't know how that looks from an environmental stewardship or an aviation professionalism safety standpoint, or that model is just not going to work.
Got it. All right.
Especially if the FAA comes down.
I think you still have a scaling problem moving big piles and lots of chemistry, no matter how much you use or don't use, that are going to necessitate a cooperative or retailer, some kind of scaling source for the farmer to be able to use any of this tech.
All right. So I think this is really an interesting thing. We're going to wrap it up here. The technology is coming. The technology is frankly already there. There's some regulatory stuff that still has to be figured out because it's like everything. Before we hit record, Andrew talked about ChatGPT, whatever, you know, it's like, we got this stuff. Now what? And that's kind of where we are, right?
Yeah.
All right. So how long until I look out my field, I look out my window at my farm, and I see a bunch of these things flying around and they're seeing and spraying and doing everything. How long until that happens? In 3 years, is that going to happen?
Half of that's happening now.
Okay.
Other half in 3 years? Yes, I think so.
You'll probably see more of it. Right now, I mean, our stats show that it's less than 1% that are unmanned. But
is that acres covered?
Well, it's mostly businesses.
Yeah,
so okay. It might even be less when you think about acres. But yeah. I certainly see it growing, and not only really taking over. Like I said, I think it's more of a compliment to us. Probably see it more on terrestrial applications than you would for some of the aerial acres. So
yeah. I think that's probably an accurate statement right there. Bill, you got anything on the way out the door?
Gosh, there's a lot running around in my head, but probably not enough time to chat about it.
If anybody wants to learn more, how about this? Leading Edge Aerial Technology. You have a website?
Yeah, it's leaaerialtech.com. And the other aspect I did want to throw out there is public use aircraft. And that has become a very popular use for unmanned aircraft. If you're a public agency, tax base, not doing it for profit, then it has a very good model right now. And it's been very successful.
And for what safe. Purpose? Using that for what purpose?
Oh, like a county or a city or a public agency using it for mosquito control or weed control. There's quite a few. Yeah. So it's a little bit different sliver. It's not the 137 certificate. You have to be a tax supported agency, that kind of.
Got it. Mike's nodding his head. All right. If anybody wants to learn more about you, and I was on his, he's going to be releasing the podcast he recorded with me as his guest. Acres Forward, right? Forward Acres?
Wait a minute. Acreforward.com.
Acre Forward. That's coming
Acre out. Forward.
So if you want to learn more about Taranis and the technology that they're working on, where do they go?
Go to acreforward.com or Taranis.com, but Acre Forward is a lot easier to remember and spell.
There you go. And by the way, he's in Indiana. Well, they have a big facility in Indianapolis, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, too. Our global headquarters is here in Westfield, Indiana. That's correct. Yep.
Fancy town, fancy suburb, fancy Indiana suburb.
It's changed. Well, that's changed in 3 years as well. I remember even 6 years ago, this being rural, and now it's not. So the world's changing fast.
There you go. All right. Andrew Moore, NAAA, National Agricultural Aviation Association. Good dudes. I like those people.
AgAviation.org. Don't forget about that. AgAviation.org. And hey, honestly, don't forget about this book either.
Thank you for the plug. Thank you for the plug. Anyway, what's really good is they are very good about the information. If you want to learn more about what's going on here, these guys obviously were very eager to come on. I thank them for being on here. So thanks a lot for being on. If you're if you're a tech person, put AgVisor Pro on your phone. It's an app. You will use it. AgVisor Pro. Anyway, till next time, Mike, Bill, Andrew, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Dave Mason, and this is the Business of Agriculture. Hey, thanks for being here. This episode of the Business of Agriculture was brought to you by Pattern Ag. You've heard me talk about Pattern Ag because I think it's a pretty cool concept. New technology that allows you to predict the problems you're going to have and therefore treat them before those problems cost you money. What kind of problems am I talking about? Pests, and disease. Things like corn rootworm, sudden death syndrome, cyst nematode, and a whole bunch of other bad things that happen out there in the field that can cost you money. Guess what? Pattern Ag will let you find out ahead of time if the disease or the pest pressure is there, and therefore you're treating it before it costs you any money. What a great concept. Go to pattern.ag, that's www.pattern.ag, to learn more about their product, their technology, how it can make you money, save you yield, and also where you can find a rep that can come out there and do the work for you. Pattern.ag.